This is The Agenda. Local newsmakers, community leaders, and people in our valley making a difference. Here's your host, Dave Bernstein.
And on the program today, we welcome State Senator Brad Hawkins. Ordinarily, he has one of those listening tours in person at communities around the district. This year, it has to be virtual and because of COVID-19. And so we've got Senator Hawkins on the line with us. And you're going to be doing those via Zoom and also over the phone. So welcome, Senator Hawkins. How are you?
Thanks, Dave. Doing well. Thanks for having me.
So can folks still get signed up to participate in these listening tour events at this late hour?
Well, yes, we're actually pretty much scheduled out for the group individual meetings because we actually are starting in the morning and going all through the day. But we have two virtual community meetings, and those take place at 3 o'clock p.m. and 7 o'clock p.m. So I want to give everybody two opportunities based on people's busy schedules. And those virtual community meetings are all comers, you know, everybody is invited, and the Zoom link information and passcodes, that's all available on my website, senatorbradhawkins.org, so people can get the information about those two virtual meetings tomorrow, and then if they don't want to participate by Zoom, there is a phone call in option where they can participate.
Okay, so those are coming up tomorrow, and normally this is the event you've held the previous 2 years, if I'm not mistaken?
This will be my fourth annual, Dave. I'm proud to say it's something I started after I got elected to the Senate, wanted to do a listening tour. It started with a two-day tour around the district, turned into almost a 4 or 5 day travel around the district. We did some fun community hikes. But this year, I didn't want to break my streak, and I wanted it to be the fourth annual, but we had to do it virtual this year. So I'm really glad we could do it. We usually do it in the fall or around this time to kind of get me thinking about the session, hear from people, hear about the thoughts and concerns that they may have, and it just really helps prepare me to do my job as state senator to represent the people of the 12th district. And then also sometimes it even gives me bill ideas or budget ideas. So it's good timing, and for the virtual community meetings, it's like I said, it's everyone's invited. So really encourage everybody to check out my website and try to join in at 3 o'clock or 7 o'clock. That'd be great.
All right, I was going to say something good in the form of legislation can come out of these. So participate if you can. I understand just here in the last few days. The committee assignments have been made, and you will be a lead Republican on the Senate K-12 Education Committee.
Yeah, so I've been assigned to three committees. Two are the same continuing committees from last session, and one is in addition to that. The first committee is the K-12 Education Committee. It also covers early learning in our state. And I've been appointed again to be the ranking Republican member, which is the highest ranking member of the Republican caucus on that committee. And I'm excited to serve. You know, I do believe with my background as a school board member, I served 10 years on two different school boards locally before I was elected to the legislature. So that was North Central Educational Service District's board and then the Eastmont School Board, where I served multiple terms as our school board president. So I bring that experience. My wife is a teacher in the Wenatchee School District, so I have the perspective of being a husband to a hardworking teacher. And we do have two kids in middle school. They're doing their online school right across the hall from me right now. And so I think the combination of my school board experience, my connection to the teachers in our community, and then also my experience as a parent can help me, do a good job advocating for important state policies. You know, it turns out that I'm actually the only Senate Republican with kids in public school. Some of them have just graduated on or their grandkids are coming up, but I'm carrying that mantle for the Senate Republican caucus and I'm proud to do so.
That means you're probably the youngest on the committee.
Well, there are a couple Democrats. There are a few Democrats in the Senate that have kids in school, but I feel old, you know, at 45, but relatively speaking, in Washington State Senate terms, I guess I am a little bit on the younger side, so I'll take that. But, you know, in addition to the K-12 Education Committee, I'll be serving on state government and elections again this year. I've had good conversations over the last few years with our auditors like Thad Duvall and Skip Moore, who provide me good feedback for a lot of the important election issues that the state government committee has to deal with. But also I got appointed to the Senate Transportation Committee this year. And so I'll be reuniting with Senator Curtis King, who's the chair, who's the ranking member of that committee. He and I worked really closely to together in 2017 to secure some funding for the West Kashmir Bridge, which is now proudly under construction. So, you know, I really do care about transportation issues in this state. We do have some very unique transportation needs in North Central Washington, and I've always considered myself a supporter of clean transportation options. Maintenance and preservation of our roads and bridges is very important. And then trying to get these larger scale projects constructed in a cost effective way that works for our drivers, but also works for the taxpayers. So those are the things that I'll be working on. And over the next couple of years, I think things like the Confluence Parkway project or, that Douglas County interchange, I'm not sure if you've heard much about that, but it's on the Douglas County side of the Otabastian Bridge, something to that scale, which is planned. So there are some very important projects in our district, and I look forward to being at the table to advocate for those.
We're talking with State Senator Brad Hawkins. We, of course, reported a little earlier this week, you've got a bill that would extend the same sales tax incentives for hydrogen-powered vehicles that the state provides for traditional electric vehicles, and it would be a 50% sales tax exemption in 2023 through 2029. So we've got to get the playing field leveled, is how you see it?
Oh, definitely. You know, like I said, I'm a big supporter of clean transportation options. When it comes to emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, carbon emissions, because our electric sector is so clean in Washington State and certainly in North Central Washington, most of the emissions in our state and certainly in our region of the state are from transportation emissions. And our state has incentives in place for plug-in electric vehicles, and it's 50% of the sales tax to help incentivize or encourage people to purchase those vehicles. But I really think when it comes to zero-emission vehicles, we should be technology neutral. And hydrogen vehicles are something that are being driven in California. As you recall from a couple years ago, I worked with Douglas County PUD to sponsor and pass a bill that would allow their PUD to utilize their excess hydropower and use that to create this new form of hydrogen that we're calling renewable hydrogen that can be used for a variety of purposes, but one of them is to fuel hydrogen vehicles. And so I really think it's important that if the state's going to extend a tax incentive to plug-in electric vehicles, we should make sure we are extending something comparable to, you know, hydrogen vehicles, so we don't sort of unnecessarily or unknowingly sort of bias ourselves as we're creating this policy. So I'm really excited. The 8-year pilot project would take effect a couple years because it's going to take a little bit of time to get the hydrogen fueling stations throughout our state, but I do believe there's a possibility that one of the first ones will be in North Central Washington. And what I really like about this bill is it gives me an opportunity as a legislator from this area to share with my colleagues the continued leadership that I believe people in North Central Washington have shown for decades on clean energy. We have our hydropower facilities that we're very proud of. We have some of the cleanest energy in our state, and if we can utilize that to help incentivize drivers rather than punish people through other policies, but incentivize people to help reduce their emissions in the transportation sector, you know, I think it's great. And anything that could benefit Douglas County PUD, since the PUDs are owned by the people they serve, then that, you know, anything that incentivizes hydrogen use could potentially financially benefit the customer owners of our PUD right here locally. So I have some big plans for hydrogen, but it starts with this bill. It's Senate Bill 5000. It was the very first bill of the whole entire legislative session to be pre-filed, and I did that December 7th, and I'm off and running.
Well, with both Chelan and Douglas PUD here operating the facilities, Chelan operates several to be able to do something with that excess hydrogen for the PUDs here to be involved with that in the future, the foreseeable future, that'd really be something. Hey, go ahead.
You know, I was just going to tell you, Dave, what's interesting about that is I don't want to get too complex with the whole Pacific Northwest electric grid, but as we've had more wind and solar generation coming onto the system, the hydro owners have had some challenges during the spring runoff when the wind's blowing and the sun's shining, you got a lot of extra power on the system. So rather than spilling all that down the river, which is actually harmful to fish, I think it'd be cool to utilize some of that to produce hydrogen, and hydrogen is kind of an electricity-intensive process. So we could figure out a way to hopefully bring harmony, Dave, between the legacy hydropower renewable resources and the new non-hydro renewable resources. And I will add, I am a supporter of plug-in electric vehicles, but I do kind of question whether when we scale up those vehicles large scale in the state of Washington, I think there could be some challenges in our transportation system. There's currently about 1% of the vehicles in Washington state are plug-in electric vehicles. They take a little bit longer to charge. There's a lot of back-end transformer, substation, transmission line issues related to getting the power to the sources, and obviously those have some environmental impacts as well. So I think there's some real opportunity for hydrogen because it's quicker to refuel, and actually hydrogen vehicles go further. And like I said, they don't emit carbon emissions either. So I've got a lot of support initially for this bill, and I hope it makes its way through the process.
We're talking with State Senator Brad Hawkins, and we'll have some more segments on the agenda as we get into session. But the listening tour is going to be held a couple of times tomorrow. And if you go to his website, is it senatorhawkins.org? Or I want to make sure I don't blow that.
SenatorBradHawkins.org, and our listening tour pops up as the first thing on the homepage, so people can click more information and read all about it and get all the Zoom links. So 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock for the two community meetings, and my hope is really to hear from people. It's a listening tour. I'm happy to answer questions and give people a preview of the session, but it's really an opportunity for me to hear from the people I serve, so that I'm in a better position to advocate on their behalf. So SenatorBradHawkins.org for all the info.
Well, here's something I heard about, and that is we had the comprehensive sex education bill that was in the legislature last year. It was passed. There was a lot of objection to that by parents. It came to the vote of the public. The public voted to allow that to continue. So, you know, the voters had their say, but it was quite a controversial piece of legislation before the legislature last year. Now we have a House bill. It's 2288. It essentially would allow health treatment for children without parental knowledge through the school districts. It's in committee in the House, and I wondered if there is something similar that you have heard about maybe in a Senate Education Committee. Since you're the ranking Republican there, you could tell us about that?
Well, if a bill like that is proposed in the Senate, it will come through the Senate Education Committee. We've heard policies that are somewhat related to that, and that, you know, that issue of parental consent does come up. If that particular bill, which I think is a House bill, if that happens to make its way through the House of Representatives this session, it will be referred to the Senate Education Committee for consideration. So if that bill advances, I'll see it. If a bill is originated in the Senate similar to that, we'll see it. But, you know, it's interesting. I think there is a movement throughout the state, especially as the political pendulum has swung quite a bit in recent elections, to try to make the public school system provide for all the needs of our student population. And health care is a real need. But, you know, having that provided extensively in the schools and sort of squeezing out potentially the parents from some of those decisions, I think is, you know, potentially a dangerous step. I haven't read that legislation, but that's kind of how it strikes me, you know. See, my philosophy as a former school board member and as a parent is I want our public school system to focus primarily on providing an educational function. I see that as the highest priority of our school system. But I think things are trending in a different direction statewide, and I think some people may argue, some legislators, that meals, childcare, healthcare, social, emotional, psychological support, and some of these other things, and education are equal priorities. And frankly, I think they're all important. But one of the things I've really struggled with as we talk about funding education in our state and why education is arguably, for some people, so underfunded, I believe it's because we continue to move the goalposts back on the level of funding. And as more responsibilities get grouped into our public education system, obviously the costs continue to grow. And where the school district's responsibilities end and where a community and parents' responsibilities begin is really kind of an interesting topic that's being discussed and debated in the legislature. And like I said, it's moving away from just providing education as a primary function to a lot of other things, which if that's the case, we're never going to have enough money to fully fund education. And some of these other issues about parental roles and community responsibilities will just sort of be blended in and forced onto our educational system.
And finally, the issue of getting the budget dealt with. I know the picture has improved somewhat, but now we're looking at a period of the year where we're doing some Christmas shopping and things like that. But still, certain sectors of our economy are going to be lagging. I guess it's more of the hospitality industry and things like that. Certainly in our neck of the woods is being hit hard. What's the latest on the economics of running our state that you're hearing as you head to Olympia? And still no special session has been called. So at this point, that's not going to happen until the legislature convenes.
Yeah, that's unlikely. We did get a revenue forecast last November. Those come out quarterly. I think the next one is scheduled for March. The overall state budget picture improved considerably with that most recent revenue forecast. It went from like a projected deficit of $6.5 billion down to $3 billion. Of course, that was before Governor Inslee's most recent round of COVID restrictions, which could have an adverse economic impact, and we'll see that in the next forecast. But we're looking at about a $3 billion projected budget deficit. But I should tell you, that is over a four-year period. And when you combine the operating budget over a four-year period, it's like a $3 billion projected deficit against a over $100 billion four-year budget figure. So really, you know, the $3 billion is significant, but we do have a healthy budget stabilization account of about $2 billion. When if you assume we're going to utilize our budget stabilization account, which I think is responsible because it is a rainy day, we should use that. That only really leaves us with a relatively small portion of the budget that we need to close. And I would prefer that we do that by making measured and modest reductions in some programs rather than new taxes, although I believe new revenues are always going to be something some legislators will be pushing for.
All right. We're starting to run out of time. I'm going to need to get ready for our next guest. Again, with the big takeaway, we want to make sure that folks know about tomorrow's virtual listening tour opportunities, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. We'll invite them to go to your website to see what opportunities they can take advantage of. And so SenatorBradHawkins.org is the best place to go.
That's great. And even if people can't participate in the listening tour, my staff and I welcome you at any time. Reach out to us by email, by phone, send us a letter. You know, my office exists to serve the people of the 12th District. I take that responsibility very seriously. I'm proud to do so. I do believe that listening is one of the most important qualities of an elected member of the legislature, and so I really try hard to focus on my listening. So I do want to hear from people, but if they can't participate tomorrow, feel free to send me an email. A lot of constituents have already been doing that, and we do appreciate it.
Okay, so we'll be hearing from Senator Hawkins each week during the legislative session. We're still working on the schedule. That will probably be on Friday mornings on KPQ, and then we'll have some periodic updates with you. We'll be able to spend a little bit more time on different specific bills and kind of progress through the legislative session right here on the agenda. So probably be our last time to visit before the holidays. Wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, thank you so much, Dave. I look forward to connecting with you throughout the session at KPQ with Kevin and you in the morning, but also maybe occasionally on the agenda.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Dave.